Accession number 31693, reel 14.
Mr. Robson, reel 14. Of the problems with the prostitution and VD, did that strike hard at the battalion?
I don't know. I mean, yes, a lot of the lads, single lads, used to go out and that, but I can't remember. Nobody used to say anything about it. To be perfectly honest, it wasn't something that they went around bragging about. But I'm sure it did go on. I say, fortunately, I had the family out there, so I didn't. I wasn't part of it. Didn't get involved in that. But some of the boys, I mean, it's troops' life, you know, wherever they go. Let's face it, if they're single. They're going so they're wild oats.
Well, they're very, very prevalent on the streets. The
prostitution, in bars, not so much on the streets, but in bars. You know, you'd be in the bar, and so a girl would come over and ask for a drink, but you just used to say, because you knew what was in the drink, it was Coca-Cola. And after a while, you used to say, just leave it, you know, we just have for a night now. Hey, some of the lads did. That was up to them what they spent the money on.
You mentioned the fact that when your family came over, you were in this
chunking mansions, yeah.
Now, life for married families in Hong Kong at that time, how did they settle, your wife and your child?
It was very, very difficult at first because Andrew would be 1963. He was only, he wasn't quite a year old when they came over. And I can remember going into the quarter up in the hiring, and it was on the 14th floor. All right, it was a big open plan with two bedrooms and a kitchen. Fortunately, the room was big enough, or the flat was big enough for them to play around in. Obviously, you couldn't go downstairs because we had to get the lift to go downstairs. And the lift, believe it or not, we had two. And I always remember it was five blocks in these flats, and all it rose to 17 floors, and on each block there were two lifts, and I must admit, many a time I've had to walk up 14 floors to get to my room. And on each floor, try and think now, one, two, I think it was six flats. Not all British, although there was a British guy living next door to me. The rest were either Japanese or Chinese. And when you came down the floor, or down to the bottom floor, the foyer was actually all shops. Jewelers shops, food shops, everything that you wanted in there. But we're always warned, don't buy local produce unless you know where it's come from, and you must wash it before eating it. There was a nappy and a shop where we could shop at in for the families. But hey, you know, going around the markets in Hong Kong, the local markets, to buy stuff off the markets was absolutely, was shall we say, eye opener. I mean, having been down there and gone back to the same markets many, many years later when I went on holiday, I looked at it and thought, man, well, I can't remember this, but they must have been there. It was the same market. And there were, I'm talking about frogs, snakes, anything you want to buy, they would eat anything. They would eat anything.
It was pretty confining, though, for yourself and other other families, that from wide open spaces and gardens, and so you're suddenly plumped in a high rise
flat.
Flat.
I'd never lived
in a foreign country.
I'd never lived in a flat before. My wife came from Berlin. She did live in a flat, but it wasn't a high rise one. It was an eye opener. It's not so bad for the families who were in the proper quarters. They lived in the quarters up in a place called Shamshapur, which was very, very.
Were these allocated according to rank or what?
It did go by rank, yeah, by rank and length of service. I'd only been married for a year, and I'd only been in the army three years, I think it was, at that time. So I didn't accumulate many points. We did have, you did get points for separation, but again, I mean, mine was minimal, shall I say. So no, I didn't get to live in the main areas of the quarters areas. But the Shamshapur was a famous place. I mean, I had friends who were married, and we used to go up there and visit them at weekend, and stay there for the weekend with them. And obviously, we used to have our parties as well, because there was good parties at weekends. Because of the area where we were in Shamshapur, they had their own club, their own lounge, and there was a shopping area there. So yes, it was so weekends when we weren't on duty or we were doing exercises was party time, and we used to have some great parties. So again, we used to go up there. So you weren't confined to one place all the time. And Shamshapur, in actual fact, was very famous during the war because it was the headquarters of the Japanese equivalent to the Gestapo. So a lot of evil things used to go on there. And there was talk of ghosts in there. And of course, the families, you know, some families said they experienced it. I don't know.
And how far was this Shamshapur from the barracks itself?
It was about 4 or 5 miles. Used to get on the local bus or the local tram. And the trams are absolutely brilliant to go on. And the local bus service was superb, was tremendous. Or you got a taxi. Taxis were cheap. And there was always plenty of taxis to choose from. So yeah, you finished work. Sometimes we worked on a Saturday morning, sometimes we didn't. You get the family together, pack your bag and get a taxi and go up to Shamshapur to the friends that we had, and we'd stay there for the weekend with them. So yes, it was no problem.
So the entertainment was obviously quite good, and families could settle in that way. Presumably the British families tended to stick together, did they? I mean, you're in a situation where you've actually got foreign people living next to you, but in the other higher quarters, it must have been much more, what, insular?
Well, I mean, it wasn't just our block. I mean, I was only in there for about a year, and I moved to a brand new a flat, Hiram, which is on the same road as the barracks I was living in, which we were living in. So that cut my distance down, plus it was a brand new quarter, or Hiram. Nobody had ever been in before, and it was absolutely superb. But that was purely for families, for married families, no foreigners, no Chinese or anything like that. They were purely, and it was only about, if I remember rightly, about six floors, that one, and that was on Austin Road. And Austin Road, to describe it, from where I lived in Chungking Mansions, it was virtually, I would say about 20 minutes walk, and I'd be in uniform walking through up Nathan Road, then down into Austin Road to the barracks. Nobody paid any attention, you know. People would nod and speak to you, you know, as you walked around, but there was no fear of walking around in uniform. No problem whatsoever. The only problem was in the summer that you used to go out very early in the morning. So by the time you got round to the barracks, that you weren't covered in sweat and your uniform was actually soaking before you even went on parades. So, but sometimes you used to have a change of clothing in the barracks, in which they allowed us to, because we also had to do our normal drills. So you weren't allowed to go out in working dress. You had to be properly dressed to go in. Sometimes you were going in civilian clothes and carry your uniform with you, depending on what jobs you were doing.
What about how did the army supply families from the point of view of the necessities of life? Did you just get your wages and then you went and shopped locally, or was there some canteen situation?
There was a family shop, and you could go down and shop in the Naffy. And obviously, and the ID and everything else, you had to show your ID. But we did, to be perfectly honest, we did most of our shopping in the Chinese shops. The stuff was perfectly good. It was cheaper. The people think that Naffy was the cheapest, but it wasn't. They had to put the... If you wanted purely English stuff, like... A lot of people like Heinz beans and everything. Yes, you would go to the Naffy. But if you wanted bread or anything like that, or meat, again, on foodstuffs, you had to be careful. You had to go to make sure that you went to a clean shop. Because some of the shops, I mean, you could walk down and you would have chickens and fish and various stuff hanging on hooks on the outside of the shops, and that was when you were careful. You never bought any of that stuff. And one of the other things, of course, which I never ever tried, which is a local delicacy, is eggs, boiled eggs, but not boiled and then put in the soil, but put in the soil in their shells, and there'll be 10 15, 20 years old, and they were local delicacies. Now I must admit, I've never tried them, and I never would. But yes, you get immersed in the local culture, and you've got to keep your eyes open. I mean, one of the first funerals I saw, and I'm not talking about ordinary working class Chinese, although Chinese are very, very family oriented. There's no two ways about it. this country could have learned more from the Chinese as far as family orientation is concerned, because they were very, very close. And a funeral, for instance, you would hear all pipes and cymbals and drums, and it was a celebration of a person's life. And you would see paper torn up in the size of notes, and they would be thrown out, you know, of the cars or the funeral procession. And they didn't dress up in black, but they were dressed in white, which I found strange. And then you would come across, when we're out, especially when we used to go out and exercise, you'd come across a cemetery, and you would see them, especially on an anniversary, and there'd be photographs on a gravestone sometimes, and they would be dug up after a certain length of time, and all the bones would be polished, and they would be put in a vase, big vase, and nobody vandalised them. And then every year on the anniversary of the person's death, the family would gather, burn the incense, offer stuff for the afterlife, polish the bones, replace them, and go away. And I thought that, again, a lot of people thought, you know, why get involved in it? But I thought it was fascinating, because I'm interested in people's culture. That's why when I go away on holiday, I'm not a beach person. I like to find out about different places and different cultures, because I love that type of thing, even now.
Did the battalion provide some kind of link with the families through an officer?
There was a family's officer and a family's senior NCO, either a corporal or a sergeant. And they used to, when a family was moving in, and I must admit, I got conned the first time when I moved in. I should have checked everything. I didn't. Because anything, when you move in, all goes through the family's officer, and any damage or anything like that, of course, you've got to pay for. And when the family had just travelled 28 hours, and you've got a baby who's crying, and you're trying to get them settled in, and they've got all this stuff laid out in the corner, and you've got to go and count everything and check everything, even the bed. At times, you just didn't feel like it. You said, look, I'll accept your word. But sometimes accepting a person's word you shouldn't do. Because any damage or anything missing, you've got to pay for. And all that is done through the family's officer. And any problems that the families have, I must admit, I would hate to do the job myself. But that had to be done.
What about the medical side of family life?
Again, families in Hong Kong itself, there on Nathan Road, there was the family clinic for wives and children. And that clinic was purely for the family's wives. And we were fortunate, where we lived in Chung King Mansions, and in Ostern Road, we weren't that far from it. I would say a maximum 10-minute walk. And down in Sham Shui Po, I think I had another one down there. But the main one was actually just on Nathan Road. And there was also a Gurkha unit actually stationed in there as well. So you've got to know, although the Gurkhas tended to keep themselves to themselves with their wives, we did have big sport and bit of sporting with them, because there was also another Gurkha battalion out in the new territories, along with, would you believe, a pack company, which had mules, because I mean, people don't realise, but out in the new territories, it is hilly, and we used to sometimes have pack mules with us when we're on exercise.
We can come to that, of course. Just take one more question about the medical side. Was this civilian doctors, or were they army doctors?
Army doctors, but there were civilian doctors actually employed by the military. Similarly, the dentist. I remember my dentist, for instance, in the medical centre, not in the barracks, because she had to go to this in this camp in off Nathan Road, and the dentist there was excellent, and he was a captain in the Royal Army Medical Corps, but he was Chinese, and I got to know him through visiting the dentist, and also later on when I was in the boxing team, because he made my gum shield. All the medical stuff was there for the families. No problem. There was no families suffered through lack of medical facilities. And the main hospital was actually on Hong Kong itself. And that was about... In fact, there was two hospitals. One was the main hospital for treating injuries and I had yellow jaundice, for instance, at one stage, and was actually in there. And then there was another one which was further up, I believe, and that's where people used to go up to convalesce, because with it being hot, and on Hong Kong itself, especially where the two hospitals were, absolutely superb. And the views from the actual, when you went out into the grounds of the hospital, you could actually look down into the harbour and see all the different ships, because Hong Kong Harbour was big in those days. They filled a lot of it in now through land reclamation, and they've actually narrowed it, which is unbelievable.
You mentioned that, of course, your first son was young at this point in time. But what was the education put together for families again in Hong Kong? Was there an army school or?
Yes, I mean, I never went in there, because my boy was only young, and my son, who was born in Hong Kong in 1965, neither of them went to school there. But there was a good school system for them, a good army school system for them, which was apparently first class. But it wasn't, that again was up in round about the Sham Shui Po area. So any family, anybody who had kids who were of school age, of course they had to go up there. Although I do believe there was in the camp off Nathan Road, there was a small infant school, if I remember rightly, because it was quite a big barracks, and as I say, there was quite a lot of facilities in there for families, and I think that, if I remember rightly now, that is where there was also a family shop, so you could get English foodstuffs in that shop in there. So yeah, there was plenty there, and as I say, the main schools was up in the other end of Kowloon.
And the maternity setup, I mean, you have a wife who's having another child in Hong Kong. Was that pretty good?
Absolutely brilliant. I must admit, when my second son was born, it was quite funny, really. I remember we were in the China Faith Club. This is the one just off Austin Road. My wife said to me, says, "I think I'm going to give birth." And I went, "Are you?" She says, Yes. So that, right, ambulance, and I must admit, ambulance were absolutely tremendous. It was there straight away. With it from the camp just off Nathan Road.
Civilian ambulance or a military ambulance?
Military, yeah. Military ambulance. It was there in no time whatsoever. And the wife and I were in the ambulance, and I can remember actually going across on the ferry, because the ferry used to travel from Kowloon to Hong Kong, and we were sat on the in the back of the ambulance going across to the other side. I mean, where we'd been travelling at a great rate of knots through Kowloon to the Star Ferry to get on the ferry and just chug away across the straits of Hong Kong Harbour into Hong Kong itself, and then the blue light going again, and then up into the hospital. And of course I think by then I'd actually got in touch with, I don't know how, I think one of the people that was in the night we were out, because this was he came early. So it was a bit of a shock, but managed to get somebody to inform the babysitter that we're on our way to the hospital. But when we got in the hospital, it was a false alarm. So we came, and so she was released the next day, and then of course later on it did happen. But yes, it was. I must admit, the hospital it was absolutely superb, tremendous hospital. It was before that when I was in, so I knew what it was like. I was in there with the yellow jaundice for about a month. But again, this is through military reasons, which I'll explain later.
How did you relate to the, what shall I say, the long-term traditional British person, civilian out there, you know, that was their careers? Did you have much contact with them?
Not a lot. Yeah, you got to know the local businessmen, you know. But we didn't have a lot to deal with, to do with them. Not a great deal. You would meet them and sometimes have a drink. Although I must admit, there's a place we used to go to. My wife and I, we became quite friendly with a guy called Larry Allen, who was a local entertainer. He was an American black guy who we became very friendly with. His wife was German, so again it was a she spoke German to my wife, so it was, and I used to speak to Larry quite regularly, and he was an excellent entertainer, and it would be in what they would call a cocktail bar now, and he would get on his piano, sing, a tremendous singer, and of course when I used to walk into the bar, when me and my wife used to walk in, the first thing that used to happen was a drink come straight on the table, and of course you used to get him a drink. He always, and even now I remember the drinks he used to, was a whiskey sour, and this is a long time ago, but he was tremendous.